9. Behind surly G. Febs in the line at the TWA ticket reservation's baggage window, a portly, well-cloaked businessman type was saying to the individual behind him,
"Look at this. Get a load of what's going on overhead behind our backs right this minute. A new satellite in orbit, and by them, not us."
He refolded page one of his morning homeopape to show.
"Christ's sake," the man behind him said dutifully. Naturally, surly G. Febs, while he waited for his ticket to festoon Washington, D.C. to be validated, listened in, naturally.
"Wonder if it's a hedgehog," the portly businessman type said.
"Nah," the individual behind him shook his head vigorously. "We'd object. You suppose a man of General George Nitz's stature would allow that? We'd register an official government protest so fast."
Turning, surly Febs said,
"Protest? Are you kidding? Is that the kind of leaders we have? You actually believe what's needed is words? If Peep East put that satellite up without officially registering the specs with Sync BA in advance, we'll..." He gestured. "Whammo. Down it comes."
He received his ticket and change from the clerk. Later, in the ExpressJet first-class accommodation window seat, he found himself next to the portly, well-cloaked businessman type. After a few seconds, the flight in all lasted only 15 minutes, they resumed their conversation of solemn weight. They were now passing over Colorado, and the Rockies could be seen below, briefly, but due to the nobility of their discussion, they ignored that great range. It would be there later on, but they might not be. This was urgent. Feb said,
"Hedgehog or not, every peep miss is a men."
"Eh?" the portly businessman said.
"Every peep east missile is a menace. They're all up to something."
"Something evil," he said to himself, and glanced at the portly man's pape over his shoulder.
"I see it's a type never before seen. God knows what it might contain. Frankly, I think we ought to drop a garbage can banger on New Moscow."
"What's that?"
Condescendingly, because he fully realized that the average man had not done research endlessly at the pub lib as he had, Feb said,
"It's a missile that wide cracks in the atmosphere. Atmosphere from the Sanskrit atman, breath. The word Sanskrit from Samskrta, meaning cultivated, which is from sama, meaning equal, plus kri, to do, and krip, form. In the atmosphere, anyhow, above the Popsen, the population center, which it's aimed at. We place the Judas Iscariot 4 above New Moscow, set to wide crack at half a mile, and it rains down MIND, miniaturized, H'd. That means homeostatic."
It was hard to communicate with the ordinary mass man. Nonetheless, Febs did his best to find terms which this portly non-entity, this nant, would comprehend.
"They're about the size of gum wrappers. They drift throughout the city, especially into the rings of conapts. You know what a conapt is, don't you?"
Spluttering, the portly businessman type said,
"I live in one."
Febs, unperturbed, continued his useful exposition.
"They're cam, that is, chameleon. They blend color-wise with whatever they land on, so you can't detect them. There they lie until nightfall, say around 10 o'clock at night."
"But how do they know when it's 10 o'clock? Each has a wristwatch?"
The portly businessman's tone was faintly sneering, as if he imagined that somehow Febs was putting him on. With massive condescension, Febs said,
"By the loss of heat in the atmosphere."
"Oh."
"About 10 p.m., when everyone's asleep,"
Febs gloated in the thought of this strategic weapon in action, its precision. It was a thin road which this weapon laid, like the gate to salvation. Aesthetically, it was satisfying. You could enjoy knowing about this garbage can banger even without its actually going into operation.
"Okay," the portly man said. "So, at 10 p.m.,
they start," Feb said. "Each pellet, fully cammed,
begins to emit a sound.
He watched the portly man's face. Obviously, the citizen did not bother to read WEP Week, the info mag devoted exclusively to pics and articles, and where possible, true specs of all weapons, both West Block and Peep East, probably by means of a data-collecting agency he had in a vague way heard of named Kish or Kush or Ketch. Phebs had a 10-year file of WEP Week, complete, with both front and back covers intact. It was priceless.
What kind of sound?
A horrid sneering sound, buzzing, like, well, you'd have to hear it yourself. The point is, it keeps you awake. And I don't mean just a little awake, I mean wide awake. Once the noise of a garbage can banger gets to you, for example, if a pellet is on the roof of your CONAP building, you never sleep again. And 4 days without sleeping, he snapped his fingers. You can't perform your job. You're no good to anyone, yourself included.
Fantastic.
And, Feb said, the chances are good that pellets might land and immediately cam in the vicinity of the villa of a SIRCAB member, and that could mean the collapse of the government.
But, the portly man said with a trace of worry, don't they have hardware equally sinister? I mean,
Peep East, Feb said, would retaliate naturally. Probably they'd try out their sheep dip isolator.
Oh, yeah, the portly businessman said, nodding. I've read about that. They used it when their colony on Isle revolted last year.
We in the West, Feb said, have never smelled the sheep dip isolator's implementing irritant. It's said to defy description.
I read somewhere that a rat that's died in the wall, far worse. I admit they have something there.
It descends in the form of condensation from a Type 6 Julian the Apostate satellite. The drops spatter in an area of, say, 10 square miles, and wherever they land, they penetrate intermolwise, intermolecularly, and can't be eradicated, even by Supsolve X, that new detergent we have. Nothing works.
He spoke calmly, showing that he faced this tear-wep without blenching. It was a fact of life, like going regularly to the dentist. Peep East possessed it, might use it, but even this sheep-dip isolator could be matched by something of West Block's that was more effective. But he could imagine the sheep-dip isolator in Boise, Idaho. The effect on the million citizens of the city. They would awaken to the stench, and it would be intermol everywhere, on and in buildings, in sub, supra, and surface vehicles, autofacts, and the stench would drive 1 million people out of the city. Boise, Idaho would become a ghost city, inhabited only by autonomic mechanisms still grinding away uncursed by the possession of noses and by the smell. It made you stop and think.
But they won't use it, Phebs decided aloud. Because we could retaliate with, for instance.
He scanned the fantastically extensive data collection embedded in his mind. He could envision a host of retail weps, which would make the sheep-dip isolator small spuds indeed.
We'd try,
he pronounced decisively as if it were up to him,
the civic notification distorter.
Christ's sake, what's that?
The final solution, Feb said, in my opinion, in any weapons,
N.E., that signified the esoteric term used in West Block's weapon circles, such as the board which he now, God in his wisdom be praised, belonged to, Needle Eye. And needle eyeification was the fundamental direction which weapons had been taking for a near half century. It meant, simply, weapons with the most precise effect conceivable. In theory, it was possible to imagine a weapon, as yet unbuilt, probably untranced of by Mr. Lars himself, still, that would slay one given individual at a given instant at a given intersection in one particular given city in Peep East. or in West Block for that matter. Peep East, West Block, what difference did it make? The important thing would be the existence of the weapon itself, the perfect weapon. God, how clearly he could conceive it in his own mind. One would sit down, he would, in a room. Before him, a control panel with dials and one single button. He would read the dials, note the settings. Time, space, the synchronicity of the dimensional factors would move toward fusion. And Gaffney Rostow, that was the everyman name for the average enemy citizen, would walk briskly toward that spot to arrive at that time. He, Phebs, would press the button, and Gaffney Rostow would... Would disappear? No, that was too mage, too magical. Not in accord with the reality situation. Gaffney Rostow, a minor bureaucrat in some temporary small-budget ministry of the Soviet government, someone with a rubber stamp, desk, cramped office, he wouldn't just disappear. He would be converted. This was the part which made Phebs shiver with relish. He did so now, causing the portly gentleman beside him to withdraw slightly and raise an eyebrow. Converted, Phebs said, into a rug. The portly businessman stared. A rug, Phebs repeated irritably. Don't you understand? Or has the Judeo-Christian tradition impaired your judgment? What kind of patriot are you? I'm a patriot, the portly businessman said defensively. With glass eyes, Phebs said. Natural simulated. Of course, if it didn't have good teeth, regular and white, if there were unsightly fillings or you couldn't get the yellow stain removed, it could be a wall hanging, flat. The head could be discarded. The portly businessman began uneasily to read his paper. I'll give you the poop, Phebs said, on the civic notification distorter. It's N-E, but not terror. Not terminal. I mean, it doesn't kill. It's in the conf class. I know what that means, the portly gentleman said hurriedly, keeping his eyes on the homeopape. Obviously, he did not care to continue the discussion, for reasons which eluded Phebs. Perhaps, Phebs decided, the man felt guilty at his ignorance on this vital topic. That means confusions, disorienting. The civic notification distorter, Phebs said, bases its operation on the requirement that in present-day society, every filled-out official form has to be recorded, micro-wise, in trio or quad or quin. 3, 4, or 5 copies in every instance have to be made. The weapon functions in a relatively uncomplicated manner. All microcopies, after being Xeroxed, are carried over coaxial lines to file repositories, generally subsurface and away from population centers in case of a major war. You know, so they'll survive, I mean. Records have got to survive. So the civic notification distorter is launched ground to ground, say from Newfoundland to Peking. I've selected Peking because that's the Sino-South Asia civic institution concentration for that half of Peep East. That's where their half of their total records originate. It strikes, screwing itself within a matter of microseconds out of sight in the ground. No visible trace survives, and at once it extends pseudopodia, which search out subsurface until it contacts a coax carrying data to an archive, you see? The portly businessman said, half-heartedly, trying to read. Say this new satellite's design suggests possibly it even... And the distorter, Phebs said, operates from that instant on in a way for which the word inspired is not excessive. It diverts integers of the data, the fundamental message units, so that they no longer agree. In other words, copy 2 of the original document no longer can be superimposed on copy 1. Copy 3 disagrees with copy 2 at one higher order of distortion. If a fourth copy exists, it is reconstituted so that... If you know so much about weapons, the portly businessman broke in disagreeably, why aren't you in Festung, Washington, D.C.? Surly G. Phebs, with the mere trace of a smile, said,
"I am, fella. Wait and see. You're gonna hear about me. Remember the name, Surly G. Phebs. Got it? Surly Phebs. F, as in fungus."
The portly businessman said,
"Just tell me one thing. Then frankly, Mr. Phebs, F as in fungus, I don't want to hear any more. I can't take any more in. You said rug. What was that? Why a rug? Glass eyes, you said, and something about natural simulated."
Uneasily, with tangible aversion, he said,
"You mean..."
"I mean," Phebs said quietly, "that something should remain as a reminder, so you know you achieved it."
He searched for, found the proper term to express his emotions, his intent.
"A trophy."
The loudspeaker blurted,
"We are now landing at Abraham Lincoln Field. Surface travel to Festung, Washington, D.C., 35 miles to the east, is available at slight additional cost. Retain your ticket receipt in order to qualify for low, low fares."
Phebs glanced out the window for the first time during the trip and saw below him, gratifyingly, his new abode, the enormous sprawling population center which was the capital of West Block, the source from which all authority emanated, authority which he now shared. And with the fund of his knowledge, the world situation would rapidly pick up. He could, on the basis of this conversation, foresee that.
"Wait till I sit in on the top security closed-session board meetings down in the subsurface Kremlin with General Nitz and Mr. Lars and the rest of those fellas," he said to himself. "The balance of power between East and West is going to radically alter. And boy, are they going to know about it in New Moscow and Peking and Havana."
The ship, retrojets whistling, began to descend.
"But how best," Phebs inquired of himself, "can I really serve my power block? I'm not going to receive that 1/6 slice, that one component which a concomity is asked to plowshare. That's not enough for me, not after this conversation. It's made me see things straight. I'm a top weapons expert, although admittedly I don't have one of those formal degrees from some university or the Air Arm Military Academy at Cheyenne. Plowsharing, is that all I can offer in the way of unique knowledge and talent so exceptional that you'd have to go back to the Roman Empire and even before to find its equal?"
"Hell no," he realized. "Plowsharing is for the average man. I'm that, computer-wise, statistically speaking, but underneath that, I'm Surly Grant Phebs, as I just now said to this man beside me. There are a lot of average men. 6 always sit on the board. But there's only one Surly Phebs. I want the complete weapon. And when I get there and sit with them officially, I'm going to get my hands on it, whether they like it or not."